This is Darian Sahanaja of the band known as Wonderments, and you're listening to 90.7 FM, WGXC Accra.
Turnout Monday, May 13th at 7 p.m. at Upstate Films Orpheum Theater in Saugerties for a screening of Stand By for Failure, a documentary about the groundbreaking band Negative Land, who pushed the boundaries of sound, media, propaganda, and perception. The evening additionally features a discussion with the film's director, Ryan Worsley, and Mark Hosler of Negative Land via Skype. This event is a co-presentation of Upstate Films, Playtime, and Wave Farm. More information and tickets at upstatefilms.org. And turn out to see Negative Land perform live in person on May 31st at the Greenville Drive-In. Info and tickets at wavefarm.org/drive-in.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by The Country Shepherd, a construction consultation and client representation service for custom residential projects and maintenance. The Country Shepherd advises clients on every element of their renovation, ground up build or remodel, from hiring the right craftsmen to managing timelines to locating the exact materials that their clients require. Founder Jeff Wilcox has been building custom residences since 1990 in New York, Massachusetts, Connecticut, California, and Italy. For more information, visit thecountryshepherd.com.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Nancy Barber and Bill Stone in Hudson, New York. WGXC monthly supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt our program of dance music to bring you a special bulletin from the Intercontinental Radio News.
This is Ginger Radio Hour. I'm Justin. You're listening to WGXC Accra 90.7 FM. I'm live in the Accra studios this morning, and I've opened all the windows, which I hope you can hear. And then the birds go silent. I have some birds on tape, too, today. Today's show is all about the senses, led in part by an interview I did over the weekend with master forager Tama Matsuoka Wong. She's a terrific new book just out called Into the Weeds, How to Garden Like a Forager. She's going to give us all sorts of advice about what to do in places, in outdoors, in spaces. And she's just, she's operating on many, many levels. I'll tell you more about that in a little bit. This is Ginger Radio Hour. Welcome.
Shy to move. There are so many people sunshine.
It's not so bad, hey, now. Can't you move a little more?
I would die.
Well, now you know the road outside. Drinking the beers and getting high. We're all alone, we're the only ones inside.
Maybe just one time.
Thank you.
Of course, was the new album from Sam Gendel and Sam Wilkes. The album's called The Duber. The track is Sweet Fire. Before that, Mackay McRaven with Sunset, and we opened the hour here on Ginger Radio Hour with the group The Children's Hour. The track Dance With Me. The birds are back. I thought I'd jump back in while they're still playing for us. I'm going to take a little bit of a right turn here because I've got John Prine on the brain, and that's in part thanks to Upstate Films, which hosted a great afternoon on Saturday with a whole bunch of film clips from his very first album and the wonderful Holly George Warren, hosting, and there was live music, and I was introduced to the singer-songwriter Laura Stevenson, who I've since been listening to a lot of her music. She is local. There's so much to be said about her and her voice. She covered a John Prine song on Saturday. And so I wanted to quickly, before I play some John Prine, play some Laura Stevenson. This is from an album from a couple years ago called Jeff and Laura. It's her and Jeff Rosenstock covering Neil Young tracks. The album is called Still Young. You can find it on Bandcamp. And here is After the Gold Rush.
Well, I dreamed I saw the nights in armor. Yeah.
birds in the sky to the fishes deep in the sea.
Lover, lover, lover,
the place where all the children can live.
Lover,
really nothing better to give.
Lover,
and your love comes back. So I'm calling out to you,
lover.
Just squeezing one of my favorite Neil Young tunes in there. But here's John Prine.
I don't care if the sun don't shine, but better all people will wonder. No man if it ever quits raining. So the kids are afraid of the thunder, see sour grapes. You can laugh and stare, see sour grapes. I don't care. Couldn't care less if I didn't have a friend. So people would say I was crazy. It wouldn't work, cause I don't need money. Except the same folks say I was lazy, say sour grapes. You can laugh and stare, say sour grapes. I don't care. Careless if she never come back. I was gonna leave her anyway. And all the good times that we shared, Don't mean a thing today, say sour grapes. You can laugh and stare, say sour grapes. I don't care.
Summer's ends around the bend, just flat. The swimming suits are on the line, just drag. I'll meet you there for our conversation. I hope I didn't ruin your whole vacation. Well, you never know how far from home you're feeling until you've watched the shadows cross the ceiling. Well, I don't know, but I can see it snowing. In your car, the windows are wide open. Just come on home. Come on home. No, you don't have to be alone. Just come on home. Valentines break hearts and minds at random. That old Easter egg ain't got a leg to stand on. Well, I can see that you can't win for trying. And New Year's Eve is bound to leave you crying. Come on home. Come on home. No, you don't have to be alone. Just come on home. The moon and stars hang out in bars just talking. I still love that picture of us walking. Just like that old house we thought was haunted. Summer's end came faster than we wanted. Come on home. Come on home. No, you don't have to be alone. Come on home. Come on home. You don't have to be alone. Just come on home.
Almost 50 years separated those two John Prine albums. That was Summer's End from his 2018 album, The Tree of Forgiveness. And before that, Sour Grapes from Diamonds in the Rough. That was a 1972 album from John Prine. So I think we've set the stage here. I'm going to dive deep into my laptop here and extract the interview with master forager Tama Matsuoka Wong. As I prepare that, let's have the ecstatic music of Alice Coltrane set the stage. Come back in a few. After Alice Coltrane, Master Forger Tama. Pretty good intro for Master Forager Tama Matsuoka Wong. Tama's based in New Jersey, though she often forages here in New York State. She wondered aloud when we spoke how the wild blueberries were coming here in the Catskills. Tama just published a book. It's called Into the Weeds, How to Garden Like a Forager. And as I said, that's what she is. She's a forager farmer. We spoke about so many things, and one of the things that really struck me about Tama is that she's operating on all sorts of levels at every moment. Her happy place is out amongst the plants and the trees, and the place outside her house. Some might call it a garden, some might call it a farm. There's woods there too, and a meadow. But I think I'm just going to call it Tama's place. And I'd really like to get straight to an excerpt from our interview, because she does such a good job of explaining who she is and what it is that she does. So we began by me asking what her wild farm place actually looks like. And here's how Tama described it.
I feel like a lot of people, well, I hesitate to even call it a garden, but there are these categories, and so I guess that's the closest category that you could place it in. It's not really a yard as people think of a yard. I've said several times that I feel like a failed gardener, so that a lot of people that come there might not think that it's a garden because it's not so neat and tidy and it's not really under control. But why it's very difficult to show it, I think, in a picture, although Nachman takes fantastic photos, is because it's moving. It's alive. So if you go there and you walk there, like right now, there's sounds, there's a breeze, there's things moving, it's alive. So that's what's different.
And so I wonder if I think this needs a little bit of explanation, and your book does a good job of it, but this is a term I'd never heard of before. And so I'm wondering if you can tell my listeners a little bit about the middle ground.
Oh, the middle ground. Okay. So this came about because I've been talking to a friend of mine who you might want to interview sometime. He is a researcher at the New York Botanical Gardens, but he's an ethnobotanist, but he also did his PhD in Wisconsin on a weed that I love, Brassica rapa. So we were talking because we got connected from somebody, and then he was talking a lot about sort of anthropological and ethnobotanical antecedents of where the Brassica rapa came from, and that's one of the plants I talk about in my book. It's like one of the original Brassica of all these brassicas, which are cabbage, broccoli, beets, a lot of the things you see today. And so he told me to read a couple of these. I was curious. So he told me to read a couple of these articles that are sort of scientific journal articles about how things sort of started. And one of them described how we used to think of this continuum between hunter-gatherer, and then we advanced to agriculture and gave up hunter-gathering, and then we advanced to where we are now today. And now they've realized that that was a myth, and that they called this way of interacting and getting food and working with plants as the middle ground. And I just really loved that. It's also just interesting because I'm Buddhist, and this whole thing about the middle way, the middle ground. But it's not middle ground in the sense of middle from in between the start of hunter-gatherer to current modern life. It's like the middle ground as that's basically in between the way you're stewarding things. So you're doing some cultivating, but you're also doing some wild harvesting. And it's a whole way of living with nature that is what humanity has been doing for a long time and still does in some other places in the world. But I just thought it was a really great way to think about it because we seem like we're in such extremes, like it has to be either or, I want a garden with only all yellow or no yellow colors in it, or I want a garden that's only herbs, or, it's all or nothing. And so I think the idea even of the middle ground as a way to interact with plants and nature and food, I really love that.
You have turned that into, obviously it's a way of life for you, but it's also something that you do as a job of sorts, correct?
Yes, yeah, it is. I have this my business too. Yes.
Can you explain a little bit about what that is?
So I supply to, because I'm in New Jersey, I supply to New York City mainly. I supply to chefs there, and I also supply to some wholesalers like Fresh Direct.
And is that a business that you have help with, or do you do most of it alone?
I have a team. It's very, very small, but I have now, I was just thinking how lucky that now I've been working with some of the same people for about 7 years. And it's a very loose ragtag kind of, I've heard this word homie or gang of people, but it's great. And I think it's just really interesting if you have somebody else to talk to and that is like finding something. We might be in different places. We might be in different states. And we're saying, wait, I found the blah, blah, blah here is doing this. And they'll be like, I noticed that too. Or no, mine's not doing that. It's kind of fun. It's very fun. And at the same time, I'll have chefs texting me and being like, do you have more of this? Oh my God, I like this. Or like that didn't work, or et cetera. So it's very dynamic, and it's never the same week to week.
And does it mean that you take some real time off in the winter, or does it just mean you forage for different things?
I do some things, but obviously right now is high season. Mm-hmm. The spring is high season, and we probably can continue on doing things until there's snow. But it does mean that if I want to go do something, or everybody can go do something in January if they want to.
Mm-hmm. So
I'd say that one of the things that is different about it, as opposed to just walking around by yourself, is kind of the level of engagement. Like, let's say and I talk about this in my book about chickweed. So chickweed is something that I feel like I've developed a skill on how I'm doing it, and I'm very fast, and it's very, very sort of calming when I'm out there in a chickweed patch, clipping chickweed. But if I was just doing this for myself, I would never sit there for several hours clipping something. But because I have a lot of people asking for this, I'm sort of like, okay, I'm going to spend this morning doing the chickweed that looks really good. And because I'm out there just in the field, as it were, then I'm almost forcing myself to spend a lot more time on something than I might if I'm just taking a walk. And then when you do that, your whole sense of everything changes. Like your hand, your eyes, your sense of your touch and the smell, it just changes. And I say you have to do it at least 45 minutes. And we've all compared this, and everybody on my team agrees. If you're not doing a certain plant for 45 minutes, you're not getting in the flow. And somehow it changes. Your awareness of everything changes. It goes really smoothly. And it's really pretty amazing. But you don't get that if you're just walking around, like, picking a half a cup of something. You know, in terms of what I just mentioned to you, I don't know if a lot of people would, you know, you have to have a certain kind of patience and mentality to do that. So for everyone, and everyone can, I think, enjoy even just a little bit. So I did this workshop in New York State yesterday, and it's always amazing. I really want to meet people like face to face, because it's different than, you know, some social media thing, I feel. And people were so interested and like wanted to get out there. And so I gave a talk, and then we went out, and, you know, there's an area that the manager said, you know, you can go in there. There's a lot of, you know, things that are kind of invasive now that are good. And then people are trying to touch things themselves, because I, you know, they were able to pick their own stuff, and they're, you know, it's the first time. And, you know, this one guy was like, okay, is this good this way? And he had kind of like gotten it like 3 feet of something. And I said, well, feel it, because eating something has a lot to do with texture, right? So if it's really that stem, feel it, it's really stringy. And if you try and eat that, it's not going to necessarily, you might like it, that's fine. But for a lot of people, it might be too tough and stringy. And so when you're thinking, and you realize that, you know, it's a lot to do with how it feels and how it smells. And people are not really used to doing that with their food. They just go into a grocery store, even a farmer's market, and it's already packaged for them or already done. And so having to experience it and observe it and use your senses yourself, I think anyone can experience that at that level.
Can you please tell the pawpaw story, which is really, it is really an advertisement, I think, for compost.
Okay. So, but this is also, and if you talk to people who've gardened or tried to garden, I mean, people just nod their head. Like, everybody's experienced this. If you spent time, like, people are trying to plant something. I want to plant this here, right? And then that plant just never thrives. And then all of a sudden, right, where you didn't notice it, it's popped up in some other place, and it's just going crazy over there. So, you know, this is kind of taking a cue from nature and not trying to fight it so much, which is, I think, what we're going to have to do as, you know, the future looms ahead of us and is here now. But the pawpaws, I mean, we eat a lot of pawpaws. We forage a lot of pawpaws. So we would always have our own stash, or we'd throw out ones that didn't look that, you know, they looked kind of half rotten or something. And then we just always throw them in this heap that we, at the time, I didn't have bins. It was a heap. And we just threw it in there as that's the compost area. And then obviously there was good stuff going on in there, because I think a couple of years later, I was in there, and it was kind of the end of the season, like November or something. I was walking through the compost heap, and there was like a tree in there. And I was like, why is there, what is there, shouldn't be a tree in the compost heap? So, and then I looked at it, but I saw the leaf, and I recognized the leaf was a pawpaw leaf. And I'm like, oh my gosh, it's a pawpaw tree. And then when I started looking around, because I noticed there was a bunch of them growing out of the compost heap. But because we didn't examine the compost heap, I don't really know exactly when they came up, but they were there. And then people asked me, so, wow, that's amazing. Are you going to move the trees to someplace you want them to be? And I said, like, no, I'm going to move the compost heap. Like, right? It's doing so well there. Why mess with something that's doing so well? And then I found since then that about 15 feet away on one side and maybe 20 feet away on the other side, there's other little pawpaw groves that have come up. And I think that's either a raccoon or an opossum or something that was taking stuff and then going over to some spot and, you know, eating them or, you know, digesting them. And so I have other pawpaw little groves, but none of them were ones that I planted. I do have a pawpaw that I planted, and it's just sitting. It's alive, but it's just sitting there. And that's about 3.5 feet tall, whereas the ones in the compost pile are now maybe 10 feet tall or more. So that's kind of what I mean. Like, you know, take your cue and make it a little easier on yourself. You know, the plants will come up with kind of where the conditions are right. And that's a complex formula, right?
That was Tama Matsuoka Wong, encouraging all of us to find our foraging flow. I really recommend her new book. Check out your local bookstore or go to the library and ask for Into the Weeds. Underneath me here you hear the Hudson River wind. Strong Wind, from the Lou Reed album, Hudson River Wind Meditations. I'd like to thank Tama. I learned so much. The book is full of incredible illustrations and photographs and projects. I plan to make a wildwood gate this summer. I'm really looking forward to it. And I feel like she got me a bit more in touch and centered, and I'm ready to go sit in the grass, in the meadow, in the weeds again. Thank you, Tama. step on a lado negro there. It's just me, Justin, reminding you that you've been listening to Ginger Radio Hour today, live on WGXC 90.7 FM in the Acre Studio, surrounded by sun and birds. A lado negro is going to take us out to the end of the hour. But just to catch you up, after Tama's interview, or our conversation, I should say, we heard Lou Reed, the band Being Dead with Last Living Buffalo, and Jessica Pratt with Life Is. The whole track list can be found on the WGXC website. Just click Ginger Radio Hour, and you can also go to my Tumblr. Just search Ginger Radio Hour. That has a track list for today, more information about the book Into the Weeds, and a full archive of the Ginger Radio Hour. There's 60 plus of them. Go rifle through them. It's kind of fun. Enjoy your day. Find your foraging flow. Here's more Lado Negro.
Manipulando tu voz, cambiándome cada vez así, espantos de agosto, supongo produce poco, modulaciones en tu sonrisa. Desplazamiento que no puedo imitar, formas en el fondo, el eco espectral. Y tú cambias.